At times I thought we'd never make it. Now we on our way to greatness. And all I ever took was patience. I used to feel so devastated. Times I thought we, but now we on our way. And all I ever took was places. Welcome, 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 welcome to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. I am Reverend Yearwood, President of the Hip Hop Caucus,
and this is Mustafa Santiago Ali.
I want to thank you first to all of our folks who are supporting this amazing show. And I want to give a shout out to our folks at LCV, our folks at UCS. I want to give a big shout out right here for WPFW. Tomorrow we are embarking on an amazing moment in history. We are embracing on Martin Luther King at the 50-year anniversary. We are embracing at, this will be 50 years since his assassination. And right here at WPFW, WPFW will present MLK Interrupted, Poverty, Racism, and Economic Equality, 50 years later. That's all day tomorrow. I mean, that's all day. I mean, we're gonna go into that from 5 a.m., so get your alarm clock set till midnight. You know, you can listen at WPFWFM.org. You know, the WPFW app, 89.3 right here. And that is Martin Luther King 50. So that's going to be an important process as we get into that. But again, thank you all for tuning in to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. I got to give a big shout out, Mustafa, for there's some folks who are listening to this show, my friends down at Howard University, you know, over there at Howard, who are doing the protests. So shout out to the young folks, my alma out there doing their thing, as well as my good friends over there at Best Cuts Barbershop, which is across the street from Howard University. They tuning in to this show, which is so important because this show is really from the streets to the suites. And for all y'all, you can check out definitely more information at think100.info for more on today's episode. You can actually submit questions. You can go to hashtag think100, or even now you got the Twitter. They got the new Twitter. We blowing up. So the new Twitter is at think100show on that. But we have a powerful show for you this week. As I said, tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. So tonight, on the evening before that tragedy, 50 years later, and let me be very clear that the dream did not die on the balcony. We'll be exploring how his legacy lives on and inspires us to continue fighting for our rights and justice. But before we bring our guest in to help connect the dots, you know, Mustafa, I just want to just talk a little about something that's, you know, we usually use this time here for our shout outs. Mm-hmm. And I just want to have a conversation, actually. This is something very serious. People, so you know that this show, Think 100%, I'm Rev Yearwood. I'm one of the co-hosts with my brother, Mustafa Ali. And this show, just so you're clear, is not about Republican or Democrats, about humanity. It's about literally fighting for everybody's children. We ain't picking nobody's children to fight for. So I just want to be clear on that. But, you know, one of the things here, for those who don't know, there's an agency that's called the Environmental Protection Agency. And for those who don't know what that is, Mustafa used to work there. He can get more into that in a little bit. But just it's just real clear. It's the agency that makes sure that the toxins in the atmosphere and the water that we drink is clean, and the air that we breathe is good. They have a lot more responsibility. They regulate car standards, make sure that they I mean, there's so much. And this is particularly important for people of color, because a lot of times, one of the reasons why we're here today and having this show is that 50 years ago when Dr. King went to Memphis, it was to fight for the sanitation workers. And it was literally an environmental justice conversation that we were having. But let me just get into this real quick. I just want to say this. The person who was put into that position name is Scott Pruitt. So he's from Oklahoma. That's not really important for the conversation. But what is important is this. And I'm going to speak from my heart if it's okay for a minute. Because I was in Flint a couple weeks ago, and they still don't have clean water. And I've seen the effects of my children, not my, but my community's children who have asthma and bronchitis. My mom is getting cancer. And all I ask for, I mean, you know, I'm not going to get into how much what me and this president don't agree or we do agree on, and you know, and but all I ask for, man, is that you just make sure that we got clean air and we got clean water. I mean, that's what I'm asking for. Mm-hmm. And right now, this person, Scott Pruitt, has made a decision to not to do that. And that means that my people die. And so I can't have that. That can't be this situation. So bottom line is that because of that, many organizations, and I just want to give a shout out to folks like Green for All, Green Latinos, Center for American Progress, Sierra Club, LCV, NRDC, Next Gen America, EDF, Friends of the Earth, Center for Environmental Health, and Environmental Working Health Group, and so many more who have said, you got to go, man. This is not a game. Our children are dying. This is not a game. And so if you're going to be in that position and be more worried about living and staying with lobbyists and be in that position and be more concerned about building doors for your office that cost thousands of dollars, be first class, going to Rose Bowl, doing all these things, man, go out there to the private sector. Do that. But if you're going to be in a position that's required of you to make sure our children got good water and clean air, our mamas don't get cancer, then, man, you got to go. You got to go, man. So Scott Pruitt is a campaign called Boot Pruitt. Please go there, check it out, be involved in that process. Boot Pruitt, BOOTPRUITT, bootpruitt.com. You know, but the reality, man, that you're destroying these laws, these regulations that affect poor people. And that's the reality, man. I mean, it's not no game. This is America. I signed up, so don't think, no, well, Rev, you're not American. No, man, I was an officer in the Air Force. So I put my life on the line for this country. I love my country. But I love everybody. And for you to be in that position and to still be there playing games, you got to go. So it's time for us to come together. Republicans are calling for you to be gone. Democrat, I mean, it's the one time, I think one time it was like we got unity on it. We got Republicans, yeah, Democrats,
yep.
Everybody saying, you got to go. So Boot Pruitt, you know, bootpruitt.com, you know, there are over 20 members of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, have called for Scott Pruitt to leave the EPA. I just asked everybody listening to my voice just to sign up at the petition at bootpruitt.com. I mean, you know, he probably on the ropes. I get it. You know, I don't know how long he's going to last, really. And I hope that whoever comes in there next, because you can't last long. Hey, just come on, man. We may not agree on a lot of things, and I get that. We might agree on how, you know, the wall is. We got to figure that thing. But let's at least agree on clean air and clean water. We should agree on that. So, Mustafa, what's your shout-out for the week?
Well, you know, it's about the fuel economy standards. It kind of ties into what you were just talking about how the impacts inside of our communities and many, many times are much more disproportionate, much more detrimental to our children, to our elders, and in many instances to our own lives. If you look at the fuel economy standards that, Administrator Pruitt is currently trying to roll back, it's just common sense stuff that's going on in this space, Rev. If you ask anybody, if I should have 50 miles to a gallon for a gallon of gas, most people are going to say yes, because most people understand that, you know, spending $3-4 for a gallon of gas, you want to get every bit of that that you can out of that space. And then the other part, too, is those emissions that are coming out of the tailpipes of cars and trucks. And we know in our communities that, once again, we are disproportionately impacted, that many of the transportation routes run right through our communities, and those impacts go right into our schools and into our homes. So we have to address that. But the other part, too, is, Rev, that they get into our pockets. And they get into our pockets because these standards, if implemented properly, will save us $1.7 trillion. Let me say that again for folks, because, you know, sometimes when we start adding T's to illions, we start getting people's attention. $1.7 trillion is associated with this. So that means that they roll it back, then those impacts are going to come back into our communities, both in our health and in our pocketbook, and that is just unacceptable, as you said. So that's why I'm so excited about the conversation that is happening here today, because we are building upon the legacy of Dr. King. We're here with champions who are not just talking about it, but being about it out there in the communities, in our colleges and universities, actually building and helping to make real change happen. So that's why Rev and I are so passionate about this, because we understand, we've seen firsthand the impacts in our communities, but we also understand the opportunities that are in front of us.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to WPFW 89.3. This is Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change, and it is just that. My name is Rev Yearwood. You just heard from my brother, Mustafa Ali. We are the hosts for this show, but this is definitely the community show. But let's get in. We have some amazing folks in the studio here on this. Actually, not even this anniversary, because tonight would have been Dr. King gave his, you know, mountaintop speech. This would have been his last day on Earth 50 years ago, and he gave his life fighting this cause. And we got somebody who was in that spirit in the studio here, in the Think 100% studio. Him and his beautiful wife is over in the corner. Every time I see him, that's always a good thing now. You know, when you see a man come with his wife, that's a fantastic testament right there in that process. But with us today, we have Reverend Leo Woodbury. He is one of the country's leading experts in climate justice, energy equity, and environmental justice. For decades, he has advised government agencies, non-government organizations. Now, they have NGOs, but for the folks over there from Best Guts to all over, we'll make sure y'all know what we're talking about on this show. NGOs, non-government organizations, and international groups like the United Nations. He is the pastor of Kingdom Living Temple, and he is the executive of New Alpha Community Development Corp. in Florence, South Carolina. Man, let's bring him in. The amazing Reverend Leo Woodbury. My brother, how are you?
I'm fine. That was an amazing introduction. I was wondering who you were talking about.
So, Reverend Woodbury, we're just going to get straight into it. As Reverend, you know, as Rev just said, you know, you've been doing it for a long time, but I want our listeners to understand your journey, because sometimes it's important for folks to understand your journey. Sometimes they see you up on stages and they don't understand all the work that has gone into, all the sacrifice. So I know you started off as a community organizer, as a student. Can you share a little bit about that journey and what inspired you to begin down this path?
Yes, thank you. Actually, my first opportunity to organize, I was 14 years of age. Mm. And at that time, I was living in Brooklyn, New York, and they had a program that was called the Neighborhood Youth Corps Program that kept young people off the street during the summer, during what they call the long, hot summers when they had riots. Mm. And so at 14, I became eligible to get a job. And the mayor of New York City at that time, Robert Wagner, announced that the city would not be matching the federal funds, so there would be no program. And so, and then at that time, they had a man who called himself a liberal Republican, John V. Lindsay, okay, who was running for mayor. And he announced that if elected, that he would have the program. And so as soon as I heard that, I went across the street from my projects, at where he had a campaign office, got some flyers, went around and put them in apartment doors, met a man named Katanga Ali from a group called The East, which was an Afrocentric group. And they said, we're going to City Hall next week to have a protest demanding jobs for young people. And I went out there. That was my first demonstration, which turned into a riot. And so that was my introduction to community organizing.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. So then how did you make that transition? Because, you know, there's this false narrative that seems to be slowly disappearing, but sometimes that folks of color don't care about the environment, are not engaged in that process. Now, we all know that that's not true, but how did you get involved in the environmental work that you do?
Well, you know, one thing when we talk about the environment and climate change, we have to realize that it impacts not only flora and fauna, but it also impacts people and communities. And so how I was introduced to it was that we had a group called the PD Community Center in Marion, South Carolina. It was a teen mentoring program. And so we had went through all the traditional resisting peer pressure, nonviolent conflict resolution. We moved into the area of health, you know, of avoiding drug addiction, teen pregnancy. And I got a fish advisory from the state environmental agency that said that there was a limit on certain types of fish in every waterway in South Carolina, and that women of childbearing age and children should not consume more than a certain amount of these fish weekly or monthly, because otherwise they may have learning development problems. And so I wanted to know where this came from. I found out it came from mercury. I found out the mercury came from coal fire electric facilities, mm-hmm. and that began my journey.
Wow. And that's one of the reasons we need to make sure that the clean power plan stays in place because
absolutely
of those types of issues. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rev.
No, definitely. I guess Reverend Woodbury, one, thank you for coming, and definitely appreciate the work you've been doing. I guess, you know, both as ministers, you know, we have a calling, and part of that calling is to serve. And so part of this show is in the spirit of looking back at Dr. King, who would have been 89. I think people forget that he was only in his 30s mm-hmm. when he was assassinated, 39 years old. And that's a lot of folks who in their 30s got to remember that. He was only 39 with small children and a wife and a whole nine yards. And I guess to me, what impact for you? I know for me, this is social justice and environmental justice, but for you in the issues from climate justice, energy equity, environmental justice, what impact did Dr. King's, I guess his life motivate you and this, you know, you use to keep going?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my family, is like a lot of African-American families, my family is from the South, from South Carolina. And my mother was actually born the same year as Dr. King.
Wow.
And so coming down visiting, I saw the black water fountains and the white water fountains. And I sat with my grandmother and other elders.
Hey, hold on.
And
for some young folks, explain what you mean when you say black water fountains and white water fountains.
Oh, segregation, you know, that they had separate accommodations, separate and unequal, so that you would have a water fountain in a public facility for whites and another one for blacks, which was absolutely ridiculous when you think to yourself that they wanted black people to cook their food, but they didn't want them to drink from the same water fountain.
Wow.
And so that shows you how ludicrous racism is. And so I grew up seeing that. I grew up hearing stories from my grandmother and other elders about how people actually died because the white ambulance came. And by the time the black ambulance came, the person had passed away. My grandfather was a sharecropper. And so even though we were in Brooklyn, New York, in the projects, we paid close attention to what was going on. And so that whole doctrine of love in the beloved community was really strong, and my parents were really strong about that. And my family, while not officially activists, my mom was the kind of person who would go around the community with a petition because they needed a stop sign on this street corner. And she was the first African-American to be elected as a vice president for the PTA because mm-hmm. she came home one day and said, why aren't there any black executive officers of the PTA? So I grew up watching Dr. King and my parents, you know, being concerned about the citizens of this country and the members of our community.
And I guess I just follow up on that. Knowing one of the things that Dr. King was trying to do, and you've done as well, is that he was trying to break down the silos within our movement. So things from poverty, racism, economic equality, militarism. You know, he wanted to say, listen, as we do today, let's figure out a way that same thing, that's the same bomb that are dropping overseas, are the same thing that are hurting our community right here. So as let's take it now for the climate movement. Does Dr. King's mantra of nonviolence, his spirit of going to the streets, his spirit of going, getting in the way, causing John Lewis's good trouble, can that work for the climate movement?
Yes, that definitely can work for the climate movement. But the important thing is that we need to move away from being siloed and segmented. Mm. Because when we look at the success of the civil rights movement or any movement, we find that people come aboard for a variety of reasons. So when you look at the civil rights movement, there were people who were involved with the movement because they wanted equal access to schools, because they wanted to eat at a lunch counter, because they wanted to marry someone of a different race, because they felt it was a moral imperative, because they wanted the right to vote. You know, there was a whole plethora of reasons why people wanted to see a change in terms of civil rights in the country. And one of the things that we need to do in terms of the environmental and climate movement and movements all across this country is realize that there are threads of justice and equity that run through all of our movements, and only when we are able to attain justice in every issue area for all of our constituents do we attain victory.
Mm. Well, Rev, we know that we really appreciate you coming up from South Carolina here to D.C. and being with us here this evening. And we know that you have a big announcement to make. Could you talk just a little bit about the Justice First Tour?
Sure. The Justice First Tour, we're joining together with some national organization and a whole host of state networks and local organization to say that we want to move away from being siloed and segmented, that just as the civil rights movement provided a big tent for people of various movements to work under, we want to do the same thing in the South. And so we say if we lift up justice first across issue areas, then that will allow us to increase our impact and to have greater victories. And so with the tour, we're asking people, irregardless of whether they're dealing with climate justice, earth justice, economic justice, gender justice, racial justice, reform of criminal justice, that we all need to come together and support each other under the banner of justice. So right now we have 10 states in the South that we'll be visiting. So it's Arkansas, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky, and Georgia. I believe I got them all. But it's 10 cities. 22.
Hold on.
I mean, 10 states, 22 cities.
Is Virginia considered the South? I'm not sure. I ain't trying to start nothing. I ain't gonna beat that one. I'm just trying to ask. Is that the South?
If you look at some of their policies, yes, it's the South.
Oh, I like that answer.
All right.
I like that answer.
So we're looking to not only build a big tent that everyone can work under, but also to create platforms. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at, for example, Virginia, the Southeast Care Coalition is over 20 organizations, the Mississippi Clean Energy Advisory Team, over 20 organizations, North Carolina Environmental Justice Network, North Carolina Interfaith Power and Light, and a host of organizations are coming together. And so that's exactly what we want to do, build a big platform so that when we want to work locally, statewide, regionally, in the areas of direct action or legislative ask or advocacy or organizing, we'll be able to do that on a larger, grander scale. And so we are inviting anyone and everyone to join this movement to call for justice first. And we're looking at it with a long-term strategy. Mm-hmm. So that we're looking at how that can be supportive of the global efforts in the People's Climate March in September. We're looking at it in terms of us making sure that our legislators are pushing legislation that advance justice first in any issue area, and also making sure that people turn out to the polls in November. And hopefully with these platforms, we'll be able to do things. One of the things I would like to do, we had a legislative day, February 13th in South Carolina. We brought together 100 individuals from 24 organizations across the state. We would love to, next year, all go to our state capitals on the same day, the same week, in all 12 states.
Okay.
So those are the kind of platforms we're talking about building, much in the same vein that Dr. King did. Mm.
Man, you know, so I want to ask you this question, and this is first, where, if folks want to be involved, where can they go to? Is there a website?
Yes, we have a Facebook page and a website, okay. And we'll be glad to share that. I don't remember the website.
Okay, well, that's why we got Think100.info. Mm-hmm. When we're gonna post it right there at Think.
Right.
So if you want to get involved, you go to Think100.info. We're gonna have the information.
Okay, thank you. Up
on the site. But let me say this, because this is actually important, because we talk about breaking silos. Many folks in our community are struggling. They're hurt. What they saw was Stephon Clark in Sacramento. They're grieving what they saw with Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, and the cycle of the decision of not holding people accountable for killing people who look like them. They're furious about when they still see the cycle, when they see Eric Garner being choked to death and on their eyes on YouTube. And then because the coal-fired power plants are still in that borough, you know, Eric Garner has an asthma attack right after that. And they still cycle. They're either killing us with asthma and pollution or poverty or with police brutality. They're seeing this cycle with, you know, we are still in many cases fighting the case of, you know, last hired, first fired. We're still fighting the situation that, man, even if we have a good movie out, like Black Panther or something, folk want to just tear that down. This is a cycle. And I get the breaking the silos down from immigration to so many other issues. But sometimes it's not so much that our community will break the silos down. It's that the progressive community, you know, doesn't want to go into their community and break down silos. It's like, yo, your folks, you gotta go talk to your folks, because mm-hmm. we voting right in Alabama. We voting good in Virginia. You know, we out here in these streets. So Maybe you got to talk, maybe next Thanksgiving or 4th of July, when that time may come up. So how do we actually, for our movement as a progressive, because it's one thing to have a siloed movement, but what happens when you have a segregated movement?
Mm-hmm.
How do you fix that? How do you fix a segregated progressive movement?
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things. So, you know, when we look at the amazing work that the young people have done recently around gun violence, you know, we need to recognize that gun violence has been going on in the Black and Latino community since the 70s, since drugs became rampant. And so we have to make it clear to people that gun violence in our schools, gun violence at a concert, gun violence against unarmed Black men and women are all the same part and parcel of the same thing. And that is really a big issue that we have to deal with. And we have to talk with our Caucasian brothers and sisters, who I've had some conversations with them. And sometimes they are afraid to speak out in their community. Mm. And so we're at Thanksgiving. We don't want to, and this is what someone actually told me, we don't want to start a lot of trouble when grandma starts mouthing off something that's markedly racist. And then on the other hand, we have our cousin across the table who's all tattooed, just out of jail, addicted to meth, who's been wanting to beat us up ever since we announced that we're coming out the closet, you know. And so they have their own issues that they need to definitely address in their community, because a lot of the injustices and the inequity that exist in our community exists because of what goes on in their community. Mm. And we have to move to a point, and they have to move to a point, where the real problem with racism in America is not skinheads and Nazis and others marching in Charlottesville. That sort of overt racism is easily condemned, but it's the quiet voice, the whisper in the ear, that says, no, Tommy, you shouldn't play with him. He looks dangerous. Mm. When it happens to be a Black child. That is the most pervasive and harmful type of racism that goes on in this country that needs to be challenged. And so we have to really push them and challenge them and challenge their commitment to peace and justice and equity when they do these things that are siloed. And so we are having some experiences with big green organizations now, where they want to come in and work in our community. And Mustafa knows about some of them, where we just set conditions. We said, well, you can only come in the community and work if you're going to do certain things. And if you're not going to do those certain things, we love you. We'll work with you. We'll support you. But you have to realize that the same Jemez principles and environmental justice principles that you agree with in terms of rhetoric, that communities should speak for themselves and lead themselves, that if that's not an actuality, then that's not justice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think, man, that's thank you so much. Listen, you have heard from the amazing Reverend Leo Woodbury, keeping it 100 on the Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. I think it's a good time for a People's Climate Music Song of the Week. And for that, Reverend Woodbury, I think a great song would be our phenomenal Air Varner, who has Which Side Are You On?
So which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a union man or a thug for J.H.
Wow, wow. That was L. Varner. Which side are you on? And you just heard from Reverend Leo Woodbury, one of the most amazing catalysts and experts on climate justice up here from South Carolina. And he has he dropped some information for us that we will definitely be posting on the website at think100.info. You are listening to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. And we are here discussing MLK at 50. Tomorrow will mark the 50-year, not anniversary, the commemoration, because nothing happy about that, of the assassination of Dr. King, and how the fight for justice lives on right here at WPFW. We will present MLK Interrupted, MLK at 50, where we will discuss poverty, racism, and economic equality 50 years later. That will start tomorrow on the anniversary on Wednesday, April 4th at 5 a.m. So get up early, set your alarm clocks when you're ready to go to work. We're going to be here all day long from 5 a.m. to 12 midnight. And again, you can listen at WPFWFM.org, online, 89.3 FM, and WPFW, the app. So make sure you pay your cell phone bill so you can get the app, listen on the app, so we can tune you in, in the movement. But man, right now in the studio, man, we have an amazing brother with us. We're going to keep this going. We have Damian Thaddeus Jones. He is currently the Environmental Justice Outreach Advocate at the Union for Concerned Scientists. He is an award-winning, he's an award-winning young leader who deploys faith, pop culture, and civic engagement as tools to empower everyday people. He is an Air Force vet just like myself. He is a former CBC staff member, and he's a native of Houston. We'll hold that against him. I like Houston, but Louisiana, you know, is where it's at. My brother Damian, welcome to Think 100%.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Hello to your listeners. And two things my mother would have me say: Union of Concerned Scientists, and two, I'm a native of Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, I like that better. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay, Mississippi.
But I went to college at Texas Southern University.
Now you done gone off the rails. Oh man, I got I just give folks at Howard U a shout out now, but we
gotta get him a shout out.
HBCU lovers all day, every day, in that process. Also, before Mustafa, we get to some of these questions. Tell me, you went to high school actually? High school, and what you're doing in high school? High school's actually got some good stuff going on right there right now as well.
With me?
Yeah, you talking about you?
Oh, with high schools?
What high school did you go to?
I went to the Piney Woods School. Thank you, Ray. I appreciate that plug.
Okay.
Founded in 1909 by Dr.
Shout out to Mark and Tess, who give the good research here.
Absolutely. Hey, great. Yeah. So founded in 1909 by Dr. Lawrence C. Jones under a cedar tree to educate the head, heart, and the hands of the African-American student who in that time had very, very small resources toward education. So he sat under a cedar tree and began teaching that young child. And so, Piney Woods is my school.
There's some things going on at Piney Woods.
I guess y'all want me to just roll it out. So as we talk about energy democracy, as we talk about self-sufficiency, as we talking about spreading resources in all communities, Piney Woods has a solar program that's happening right now that wants to train young people how to install solar on their roof. And we talk about the advantages that can create in our communities. Also have, there's 10 acres or more. Maybe more than that, or in Piney Woods. And we want to use that land as well to create energy back into the grid and create self-sufficiency for that jewel, that school that is still there. And so you can visit pineywoods.org or contact myself or president of Piney Woods School, Will Crossley, and we can try to move that forward. But it's really exciting. And that's something that Dr. King advocated for, is opportunity for everybody.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, Damian, did you start your grassroots activism in Mississippi or in Houston? And how did that all come about?
Oh, man. Thank you for the question. I grew up watching two freedom fighters, and my mother and my father, every day in the community, Boy Scouts, church, the Usher program. That's a serious program, ushering, right? And I was thinking about it yesterday.
That's serious. You're right. No, ushering is real serious now.
It is. You got to come in a straight face. If you open the door at the wrong time, you may get fired, brother. And but yeah, just watching my parents and in Houston, I knew I wanted to do something, and I wanted to get involved in politics. And so as we talked about gun violence earlier, Reverend Woodbury, and my colleague Sharice Johnson wrote a beautiful blog around gun violence and how research plays into that. But when Mike Brown died, me and two other friends, Shakir and Darrell, we started the Houston Justice Coalition to say no more. Mm. 350 times or more, 288 times a cop was given a no bill in Houston for shooting a civilian. There's no way that there's no impropriety in that. So we wanted to stand up and say something. And so it started there, and just leading millennials and giving a voice to it and saying no more and less talk, more action. Mm-hmm. And that translated into working in legislative spaces and working criminal justice as well. And so it's been really great.
And Dr. King's legacy, how did that play into your work?
So I always go back to this. So Dr. King's greatest speech to me is the drum major instinct.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. All right, y'all. I know we're about to wake it up, Ribs. And so in Matthew 23:11, it says, he that is greatest among you will be your servant. And so for me, all of the work that I do, be it in environmental justice, be it in motivational speaking, be it in criminal justice, it's about fairness across the board, fairness for everybody, and say that we've got to continue to push on. Dr. King knew that he was about to die, and we talked about this earlier. Mm-hmm. He said, I want to live a life of longevity. It has its place, but I also want to do the right thing. So I'd rather live in truth and live well and not live so long, but it's about standing tall, giving voice to people, let communities speak for themselves and lead themselves, and that's something that we've tried to do at UCS as well, and I know you're doing as well.
So I know, you know, because we've known each other for a while, I know you are out across the country. You're on college campuses, especially our HBCUs. You are in high schools.
Yes.
And, you know, just
elementary
connecting.
Schools, man. I lost my voice.
Uh-oh, and elementary schools. Okay. Yeah. So what are you hearing from young people about their expectations on climate and environmental justice?
That's a beautiful question. I'll say this. Research and development.
Okay.
Research and development. It's research that's going to really prove the point that our kids are being shot and the PTSD that comes from it. It's going to be research that shows how many of our children are dying from asthma. And I love that you always talk about Erica Garner and Eric Garner and how she died from a heart attack that was caused by asthma in that cancer alley. I was just with Dr. Wright just last week, and she participated in a program at UCS called the SAFE Project, where we're bringing scientists and analysts together to be a force in equity. You know, it's been really beautiful. And she talked about, and I want to get to this really quickly, and she talked about the history of the environmental justice movement, 1982 with Reverend Ben Chavis and the United Church of Christ and their involvement.
Come on now.
As well. No, seriously. But also talk about executive order, 12898.
Yes, sir.
You were there, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
How was it? I want to flip it on you a little bit. The impact of it, because I've been in this work a few years. But y'all have been living this.
Hold on. Let me just say this real quick. I know David is young. I was going to ask him a young question about, you know, being young and all that. Why are you going to turn to Mustafa like as though, like, you were there when Jesus was born or something?
I know. I'm usually the youngest.
Why are you going to be like, man, back in the day when they first wrote EJ Mustafa, how was that? When it was, I'm just saying. You can't come. I know it's the coolest show on climate change. You can't come and take the shots at my whole staff.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mustafa. How was it back then?
Well, long time ago. No, go ahead, David. Finish up, bro.
But I mean, how was that being a part of that day with Executive Order 12898 and what it brought for clean air and clean water around this country?
I think it was a moment that so many folks had worked for literally decades. You raised, you know, Ben Chavis's name, Reverend Ben Chavis, and Charles Lee, Vernice Miller, Travis, Dr. Robert Buller, Dr. Beverly Wright.
Yes.
I mean, I can go on and on. Those are the folks who put the foundation together. And those are the individuals who pushed, because sometimes people get it twisted. They think that folks in the government are the ones who are coming up with these innovative ideas about protecting our communities. And that is a false narrative. It is those individuals, grassroots leaders, those academics and others who were continuing, when they couldn't get any attention, to push to make sure that these tools were in place to better help to protect our community. So for me, being a young person at that time, a very young person, it was inspirational to see folks who looked like me, who were making real change happen, and who were actually moving the president and vice president of the United States to do the right thing.
Yeah. Dave, let me ask you a question. And I know you get involved with this a lot. Kind of just have a two-part question, actually.
Sure.
So one is, how old are you, actually?
33.
Okay.
It's my Jesus year.
No, that's a good response.
I'm blessed. I'm so blessed, real.
But, so Dr. King passed away 6 years.
Yeah.
From where you are now. And literally, you know, when you were born, you know, Dr. King had already been gone for about 20 some years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
some states still fighting to honor his own birthday.
And that's my question for you as a millennial.
Yeah.
Right? What is Dr. King? Because I mean, a lot of times I think that it's all for some people, they look back and it's just, you know, it's now a monument. Shout out to Alpha Phi Alpha, getting the monument up there.
Yeah, right. Harry Johnson.
And all them. Yeah. Shout out to that. And shout out to this all the folks who've come before in this movement. But what does MLK mean to a millennial? That's the first part. Mm-hmm. And the second part of my question is that then how do we, because now using our culture, how do we use hip-hop? Because obviously hip-hop wasn't around with MLK.
How
do we use hip-hop in the spirit so that justice can live on? So what does MLK mean to you as a millennial?
Right.
And how are we using hip-hop today to fight for justice?
Don't let me lose that second question.
I'm not going to let you lose it.
And so MLK as a millennial, what that means to me, I'm right on the cusp, so I can kind of fit in both, thankfully. But I think it's important to understand that Dr. King has been, as Dr. Cornel West calls it, Santa Clausified over the years. And all we only know of Dr. King from I Have a Dream speech. And we know that parts of that speech was taken out and so forth. But for Dr. King, it's about having no fear. You know, in the Bible, the fear not shows up 365 times. So that tells us that every day we should wake up and move forward with a spirit of fearlessness.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's Scott Pruitt, whether it's Donald Trump, or some other person who is not in the best interest of our lives around climate change and climate justice. So for Dr. King, it's about no fear. When he went into Chicago in 1967, his life was in danger like never before. When he moved down the bridge in Selma, his life was in danger each and every day. And when he started the movement, it was Dr. King sitting down at 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So if Dr. King can step into a movement like that and move this country forward, the Voting Rights Act, public accommodations, better housing that we need, and even today our people are dying from lead, Corrin Gaines, Freddie Gray, and others. It's just been incredible. So for Dr. King, we could take so many different things. We could attack economic justice. We could attack environmental justice, segregation, and those things. But just Dr. King says, I want to live well. And I'm going to tell the truth, and there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. And I'm just going to move with no fear to attack the forces of evil and those pushing back against those on the margins, the 1% and 2%, those who are not concerned about everyday people.
Mm-hmm. And so don't lose the second part of that question.
Yeah.
Right. But I actually want to ask you a follow-up to what you just said then. Then does that mean, because now let me ask you a question, since you've lived not through Dr. King, but you've lived through President Obama.
Yes, oh God.
Does that mean in 2058 we will Santa Claus President Obama and make him this perfect with no flaws? Or will we talk about, you know, what he did, what he could have done better?
Yeah.
Like, tell me now that you've gone through the movement building and say that, man, right now during my time of activism, this is what I saw. How do you then equate that for the next generation who may then look at President Obama the same way when they say this is a monument for Barack Obama and they say, man, he was just nothing wrong and he did everything by himself. Nobody did anything else for those 8 years he was in office. And like, man, no, a lot of folks was working and organizing.
Yeah.
How do you speak to that moving forward for you?
Yeah. I just want to give a shout out to
you. You'll be 88 then.
What?
You'll be 80, but 50 years.
85.
Well, if you're 33 now, and you go back to that standpoint, you'd be in your 80s. You'd be still young and vibrant.
How old Dr. King be now? 79?
He'd be 89.
89 now.
So you, that's what I'm saying. You'd be around that age.
Yeah.
So 89 then, so how would you be now thinking about President Obama and looking forward? Like, how would that affect you? And then don't forget the hip-hop question.
First, let me say I want to give a shout-out to Ken Kimmel, the president of the Union of Concerned Scientists, Kathy Ritz, our executive
shout
director.
Out, Ken.
Yeah, all the work that they do, and I hope we can get Ken on sometime.
Yeah, we definitely going
to
do that.
Soon to talk about the great things happening
also,
in the organization.
Also, folks don't know Mustafa Ali's on the board of UCS.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mustafa Ali.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's an honor to be on the board.
Thank you for your service, brother. Wait, so your question, my question, so President Obama, oh my God.
Will we set the clause him 50 years from now?
No, because here's the great thing about Mr. Obama. He's not dead. He's still vibrant. He's still working.
That's a great answer.
He's still working. And so he's still the Democratic president. And so he understands, he knows how to move. He understands what he needs to say, when to push back. His voice, he and Michelle's voice still can open some doors in this country on international policy, on domestic policy. And so he's still kicking. Eric Holder, still kicking. Gina McCarthy, still kicking. Bill McKibben, still kicking. We have people who are still moving this movement forward. But no, we can't stand to classify him because Dr. King, his movement, his energy, his body was put to rest 50 years ago. His spirit is still moving, but President Obama is still here. So we still got some time.
That's a great response. Mustafa, we got some time for one more question. We may. I want you to make sure you get in this Mustafa's question and my question.
The hip-hop question.
Yeah, so go ahead, Mustafa, first. Ask your question and add mine onto that.
Yeah, I was just going to share because I know that you are at the People's Climate March. You know, you're at the March for Our Lives. You know, all of these really incredible moments that are happening. I'm curious, what changes do you see happening with all these incredible young leaders who are making their voices heard?
I don't care what walk of life you're in. I don't care what angle. I don't care what state legislator we're in. I don't care what city hall we're in. I don't care what community center or whatever the issue may be, because it's all intersectional. But if you move with a sense of fear,